men learned the principles of justice which they were to establish in Sicily, which at that time was prosperous, and throughout Grecian Italy. Up to this point, I agree with Posidonius. But that philosophy discovered the arts of which life makes use in its daily round, I refuse to admit. Nor will I ascribe to it an artisan's glory. Posidonius says, when men were scattered over the earth, protected by eaves, or by the dugout shelter of a cliff, or by the trunk of a hollow tree, it was philosophy that taught them to build houses. But I, for my part, do not hold that philosophy devised these shrewdly contrived dwellings of ours, which rise story upon story, where city crowds against city, any more than that she invented the fish preserves, which were enclosed for the purpose of saving men's gluttony from having to run the risk of storms. And in order that, no matter how wildly the sea is raging, luxury may have its safe harbors in which to fatten fancy breeds of fish. What? Was it philosophy that taught the use of keys and bolts? Nay, what was that except giving a hint to avarice? Was it philosophy that erected all these towering tenements, so dangerous to the persons who dwell in them? Was it not enough for man to provide himself a roof of any chance covering, and to contrive for himself some natural retreat, without the help of art and without trouble? Believe me, that was a happy age, before the days of architects, before the days of builders. All this sort of thing was born when luxury was being born. This matter of cutting timber square and cleaving a beam with unerring hand as the saw made its way over the marked out line. The primal man with wedges split his wood. For they were not preparing a roof for a future banquet hall. For no such use did they carry the pine trees or the firs along the trembling streets with a long row of drays, merely to fasten thereon paneled ceilings heavy with gold, forked poles erected at either end propped up their houses. With close-packed branches and with leaves heaped up and laid sloping, they contrived a drainage for even the heaviest rains. Beneath such dwellings they lived, but they lived in peace. A thatched roof once covered free men. Under marble and gold dwells slavery. On another point also I differ from Posidonius, when he holds that mechanical tools were the invention of wise men. For on that basis, one might maintain that those were wise who taught the arts of setting traps for game, and liming twigs for birds, and girdling mighty woods with dogs. It was man's ingenuity, not his wisdom, that discovered all these devices. And I also differ from him when he says that wise men discovered our mines of iron and copper. When the earth, scorched by forest fires, melted the veins of ore which lay near the surface and caused the metal to gush forth. Nay, the sort of men who discover such things are the sort of men who are busied with them. Nor do I consider this question so subtle as Posidonius thinks, namely, whether the hammer or the tongs came first into use. They were both invented by some man whose mind was nimble and keen, but not great or exalted. And the same holds true of any other discovery which can only be made by means of a bent body and of a mind whose gaze is upon the ground. The wise man was easy going in his way of living. And why not? Even in our own times, he would prefer to be as little cumbered as possible. How, I ask, can you consistently admire both Diogenes and Daedalus? Which of these two seems to you a wise man? The one who devised the saw, or the one who, on seeing a boy drink water from the hollow of his hand, forthwith took his cup from his wallet and broke it, upbraiding himself with these words: "Fool that I am, to have been carrying superfluous baggage all this time!" And then curled himself up in his tub and lay down to sleep. In these our own times, which man, pray, do you deem the wiser? The one who invents a process for spraying saffron perfumes to a tremendous height from hidden pipes? Who fills or empties canals by a sudden rush of waters? Who so cleverly constructs a dining room with a ceiling of movable panels that it presents one pattern after another, the roof changing as often as the courses? Or the one who proves to others, as well as to himself, that nature has laid upon us no stern and difficult law when she tells us that we can live without the marble cutter and the engineer, that we can clothe ourselves without traffic in silk fabrics, that we can have everything that is indispensable to our use, provided only that we are content with what the earth has placed on its surface. If mankind were willing to listen to this sage, they would know that the cook is as superfluous to them as the soldier. Those were wise men, or at any rate like the wise, who found the care of the body a problem easy to solve. The things that are indispensable require no elaborate pains for their acquisition. It is only the luxuries that call for labor. Follow nature, and you will need no skilled craftsman. Nature did not wish us to be harassed, for whatever she forced upon us, she equipped us. But cold cannot be endured.